Let's read together Job chapter 8. In this chapter, we have the first speech of Bildad to Job concerning Job's sufferings. Let's begin by reading the first 7 verses. Job chapter 8, beginning with verse 1. Then Bildad the Shuhite answered and said, "How long will you speak these things, and the words of your mouth be like a strong wind? Does God subvert judgment, or does the Almighty pervert justice? If your sons have sinned against him, he has cast them away for their transgression. If you would earnestly seek God and make your supplication to the Almighty, if you were pure and upright, surely now he would awake for you and prosper your rightful dwelling place. Though your beginning was small, yet your latter end would increase abundantly." Let's begin our study of this chapter, Job chapter 8, with some background notes. What do you know about Bildad the Shuhite, Job's second counselor? Now, I'm sure you've heard the lame joke that Bildad the Shuhite was one of the shortest men in the Bible, even shorter than Zacchaeus. After all, he was only the height of a shoe. Bildad the Shuhite. Seriously speaking, Bildad the Shuhite was a descendant of Abraham. I'm reading from Genesis chapter 5, the first couple of verses. Abraham again took a wife, and her name was Keturah, and she bore him Zimran, Jokshan, Medan, Midian, Ishbak, and Shua, from Genesis chapter 25, verses 1 and 2. Sarah, Abraham's first wife, died in Genesis 23. Now we read in Genesis chapter 25 that Abraham took a second wife named Keturah and had 6 more sons. Shua was one of these 6 sons. So Bildad the Shuhite was a descendant of Shua and thus a descendant of Abraham. By the way, the idea that all of the Arabs descended from Abraham through Ishmael is not correct. Many of the Arab tribes descended from these other 6 sons of Abraham with Keturah. Thus, Bildad was an Arab. Now, when we compare Bildad's speech to Joab with Eliphaz's speech to Joab, we find that Bildad is not quite as gentle as Eliphaz. He is more impatient and insensitive, but his argument is the same as that of Eliphaz. Job, you must have sinned because you are suffering, and all suffering is because of sin. Well, that brings us to our doctrinal point for Job chapter 8. The first speech of Bildad contains 3 wrong ways to determine what is true. The first speech of Bildad contains 3 wrong ways to determine what is true. Number 1, good motives do not determine what is true. Good motives do not determine what is true. As we analyze Bildad's speech, we see that his motives were right, but his premise was wrong. Bildad wanted to defend God's righteousness and integrity. After all, as we saw in chapter 7, Job was questioning God's ways, and Bildad wanted to defend God's ways. And so Bildad implied that all of Job's words were like wind, verses 1 and 2. Look at those verses once again. Then Bildad the Shuhite answered and said, "How long will you speak these things, and the words of your mouth be like a strong wind?" By wind, Job meant empty words or maybe even destructive words. How dare Job question God's ways, verse 3. Does God subvert judgment? Or does the Almighty pervert justice? So we see that Bildad's motives were right and good, but his premise was wrong. And good motives do not determine what is true if you start with the wrong premise. Bildad's wrong premise was the same wrong premise that Eliphaz held, as we've seen. He was convinced that Job's family had sinned and got what they deserved, verse 4. And now Job himself was suffering because of his sin. But there was still hope for Job, said Bildad. If only Job would confess his sin and get right with God, the Lord would restore Job to his righteous estate, verses 5 through 7. Let's read verses 4 through 7 once again. If your sons have sinned against him, he has cast them away for their transgression. If you would earnestly seek God and make your supplication to the Almighty, if you were pure and upright, surely now he would awake for you and prosper your rightful dwelling place. Though your beginning was small, yet your latter end would increase abundantly. So Bildad's argument sounds good and logical, and certainly his motives for defending God's righteousness were good, but his premise was wrong, as we know from the rest of the book. The lesson is obvious. Good motives do not determine the truth. Truth is determined by what God reveals to be true. That was true in Job's day, and it is true today. Illustration: how is marriage to be defined? Secular sociologists may have good motives and not want to draw lines which would discriminate or exclude, but God has revealed that marriage is to be between one man and one woman. Another illustration: did this universe and life come about from nothing and blind chance and biological evolution, or was a creator involved? Well, we know what God's word reveals as to the truth of this matter. Secular scientists may have good motives to properly use the scientific method, etc., etc., but good motives do not determine what is true. Number two, past tradition does not determine what is true. Past tradition does not determine what is true. Verses 8 through 10, Job chapter 8, beginning now with verse 8. For inquire, please, of the former age, and consider the things discovered by their fathers. For we were born yesterday and know nothing, because our days on earth are a shadow. Will they not teach you and tell you and utter words from their heart? We see in verses 8 through 10 that Bildad appeals to tradition for his authority. We saw that Eliphaz used his own personal experience as his authority. But now Bildad uses the experience of past generations to back the same wrong premise that Job was suffering because he sinned. After all, could past generations all be wrong in their conclusion that personal suffering is because of personal sin? What's the answer here anyway? The answer is that past tradition does not necessarily determine what is true. This applies to specific facts as well as general principles. For example, the tradition that the Apostle Peter was crucified upside down, we believe, is factual. But the tradition that Jesus descended into hell between his death and resurrection, we don't believe is factual. It comes from the Apostles' Creed and a wrong interpretation of 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 18 and 19. In reference to general principles, the tradition that you reap what you sow is a true principle because it is scriptural, Galatians 6, 7. But the tradition that personal suffering is because of personal sin is not a true principle, no matter what past generations say, because it is not taught in the Bible. Some personal suffering is because of personal sin, but not all personal suffering is because of personal sin. So let's be careful when we hear what past generations have to tell us. Much of it is good, but remember that past tradition does not determine what is true. The Bible is the last word. And number three, trustworthy statements do not determine what is true. Trustworthy statements do not determine what is true. Verses 11 through 19, Job chapter 8, beginning now with verse 11. Can the papyrus grow up without a marsh? Can the reeds flourish without water? While it is yet green and not cut down, it withers before any other plant. So are the paths of all who forget God, and the hope of the hypocrite shall perish, whose confidence shall be cut off, and whose trust is a spider's web. He leans on his house, but it does not stand. He holds it fast, but it does not endure. He grows green in the sun, and his branches spread out in his garden. His roots wrap around the rock heap and look for a place in the stones. If he is destroyed from his place, then it will deny him, saying, I have not seen you. Behold, this is the joy of his way, and out of the earth others will grow. We see in these verses that Bildad brings three illustrations into his argument and then draws what we could call trustworthy statements from these illustrations. In verses 11 through 13, Bildad uses the illustration of the papyrus plant that will dry up if it doesn't have water. And now comes the trustworthy statement in verse 13 that without God, man withers up and dies without hope. Now, that is a good illustration and trustworthy statement. But Bildad was wrong to apply it to Job. It was not true that Job had cut off from God. In verses 14 and 15, Bildad used the illustration of a spider's web to imply that Job was depending on his possessions instead of depending on God for stability and security in life. Once again, a great illustration, and it certainly is a trustworthy statement that if you depend on your possessions for security, it is like grasping at a spider's web to support you. But it was not true about Job. Job was not trusting in his possessions. In verses 16 through 19, Bildad used the illustration of a flourishing, well-rooted plant that is pulled up and replaced with another plant. Bildad implied that Job had been like that flourishing plant, but now is being uprooted, and his only joy was to know that he would be replaced. Again, an appropriate illustration and trustworthy statement if indeed Job was forsaking the Lord. But he was not forsaking the Lord. Good illustrations and trustworthy statements must fit the case in order to be valid. Trustworthy statements do not determine what is true. So we've seen three wrong ways to determine what is true. The first speech of Bildad contains three wrong ways to determine what is true. And that brings us to our practical application for Job chapter 8. Don't counsel like Bildad. Don't counsel like Bildad. Verses 20 through 22. Job chapter 8, beginning now with verse 20. Behold, God will not cast away the blameless, nor will he uphold the evildoers. He will yet fill your mouth with laughing and your lips with rejoicing. Those who hate you will be clothed with shame, and the dwelling place of the wicked will come to nothing. Now, at first glance, this seems like good counsel, doesn't it? Be encouraged, Job. In the end, you will have joy, and the wicked and your enemies will be removed. But upon closer examination, we find that it is bad counsel, because it was based on the wrong concept, that this joy and vindication would only be true if Job renounced his evildoing and returned to a life of integrity. How devastating! Bildad was judging Job, and he was wrong in his premise and wrong in his conclusions. And think of how devastating it must have been to Job to be told that his children had probably died because they had sinned. Verse 4, if your sons have sinned against him, he has cast them away for their transgression. How devastating that is to counsel a person like that. Even if that were true, you don't counsel suffering people up front by telling them that their children were killed because they sinned. And it probably is a good idea not to start your counseling session like Bildad did by telling your suffering client that they are just a windbag filled with hot air. That's essentially what Bildad says to Job in verse 2. How long will you speak these things, and the words of your mouth be like a strong wind? Don't counsel like Bildad.